From the World Newsroom in Boston, I'm Patrick Cox, and this is The World in Words, number one. Today, national anthems. Like it or not, we'll hear plenty of them at this summer's Olympics. And the lyrics to an anthem, or the absence of lyrics, say a lot about the state of a nation.
As a free man, I take pride in the words, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Si se puede is right. Yes, we can.
There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Yuxamash. Thank you, Borat. The World is a co-production of the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. And you can find out more about the show, including how to subscribe to all our podcasts, by going to theworld.org. This is the first edition of what we hope will be a weekly podcast on language and languages. We'll consider just about anything that falls under that rubric, so long as there's an international aspect to it. So I guess the theme of today's podcast is that words are always political, intentionally or otherwise. First, we'll consider a country that's just attempted to put words to its national anthem. Then a country with an anthem that has words in many languages, but not many of its citizens can recite those words. And then a made-up language that seems entirely harmless, but it still managed to offend someone. First stop, Spain. Spain has a national anthem, but the song does not have official lyrics. So the Spanish Olympic Committee, which wanted lyrics in time for this summer's games in Beijing, sponsored a contest. There was a winner, for a while anyway. Here's The World's Jerry Haddon reporting from Barcelona.
The new lyrics were leaked by a conservative newspaper. On the radio, commentators were already trying them out.
Y España, cantemos todos juntos con distinta voz y un solo corazón. Ama la patria.
Uy, no, perdona.
The singer stumbles, as will no doubt many Spaniards. National anthems are designed to unite fellow countrymen, but in Spain, the song only seems to divide. The controversy with this latest version begins with the first two words, Viva España, or Long Live Spain. That phrase is strongly associated with the fervent patriotism of the dictator General Francisco Franco, who ruled from 1939 to 1975. Franco came to power after a bitter civil war between what historians sometimes call the two Spains, one conservative and Catholic, the other urban, progressive, and socialist, fascists and reds in Spanish shorthand. Today, Spain is a democracy, but the ideological divide has not healed. This afternoon, socialist Vice President Maria Fernanda de la Vega immediately cast doubt on whether her party would accept words linked to a period when the left was oppressed.
En mi opinión, el marco adecuado para poder aprobar.
In my opinion, she said, before we finalize any lyrics, we need to have broad consensus. There are several stumbling points with the new lyrics. One in particular has the right incensed. Love to the fatherland, it goes, who knows how to embrace, beneath blue skies, its free peoples. It's the S at the end of peoples that's proving hard to swallow. Conservatives fear it's a subtle signal that some regions can push for various degrees of autonomy, even total independence. In the most extreme case, separatists from the Basque country have been waging an armed fight for independence. They've killed more than 800 people. With all of these underlying fissures in Spanish society, many Spaniards today have been wondering why anyone even tried to write lyrics for the anthem. Quique del Olmo is a Catalan from Barcelona whose girlfriend is Basque.
En España en estos momentos existen muchos sentimientos en contra de la unidad del territorio español.
He says in Spain at the moment there's a lot of sentiment against the unity of the Spanish territories, thanks to the terrible politics, both by the government and the conservative opposition. So perhaps it wasn't the best moment to write national lyrics. They'll only serve to raise tensions.
That's The World's Jerry Haddon, and raise tensions is exactly what has happened in Spain. Jerry emailed me a couple of days ago with an update. Here's what he wrote. Things took a turn for the ugly, with insults and old fault lines in the shaky society beginning to open. And the poor author, an unknown artist who'd found himself suddenly catapulted to glory, was unceremoniously dispatched by the tyranny of public opinion, driven from the mythical Spain he thought he'd captured in words. So, no singing along this summer for Spaniards if they strike gold. There may be no singing along for South Africans too, though their anthem does have words. Here's reporter Terry Fitzpatrick.
It's tradition almost everywhere to stand before a sporting match begins while the national anthem is played. The trouble in South Africa is many people can't sing along.
Do you know the words to South Africa's national anthem?
Yes.
All of them?
Because it's a kelele, yes.
Can you sing it?
Africa.
Could you sing it? No.
Leave me alone.
Many South Africans know the title and first line, but if you press them, they don't know much more.
Want to give it a spin? Here's the words.
Kosi sikilele Africa. Pula pakanyizwe mfundulayo.
You don't know what that means, do you?
No idea, mate.
The song is called Nkosi Sikilele Africa, Lord Bless Africa. It's a blend of protest lyrics from the anti-apartheid movement. Mixed in are parts of the old Afrikaner anthem, Die Stem von Südafrika, the call of South Africa. The new song includes 5 different languages, and many whites haven't learned the Zulu, Xhosa, and Sesotho phrases. Many blacks have trouble too.
I've got the words here. Could you try singing the Afrikaans?
A diplomat on the man. A diplomat on the
sea. Do you know what those words mean?
No, I've got no idea.
As anthems go, South Africa's is unusual. In the spirit of racial reconciliation, officials merged black and white traditions in the 1990s rather than commissioning a new song.
I'm going to play it for you on my rather out-of-tune piano, just the opening phrase, very, very slowly.
Music professor Stephanus Muller from Stellenbosch University calls the result an uneasy fit. The song starts softly and then changes character.
So what we've got in the joining of Nkosi Sikelel and the stem is a church hymn and a military march. It is still 2 separate anthems and sounds like 2 separate anthems.
All races are legally equal in the new South Africa, but in many ways they lead separate lives. At sporting events, people don't sing in harmony, they sing in turn. Muller thinks it's a metaphor for the inequities that still exist.
I think South Africans hear in this anthem something of the kind of uncomfortable compromise that is South Africa today.
Not everyone believes that discomfort is acceptable.
You know, if we can't all sing the anthem together more than a decade after it was introduced, then we're wasting our time in this country, aren't we?
That's Cape Town talk radio host Aidan Thomas. He's on a mission to get South Africans to learn their anthem.
I don't care if you don't speak Xhosa or Sotho. I don't. But I've bothered to learn the anthem. So it clearly is not a language issue. Hang your head in shame if you can't sing our anthem. You're an embarrassment to your country and your flag. You're a disgrace as a citizen.
Thomas says some people have taken up his challenge to learn the song, but he doesn't think he's changed many hearts and minds. That kind of transformation will have to happen elsewhere.
Can anybody tell me what the words Nkosi Sikelele Africa mean? Yes?
Lord bless Africa.
How about the next part?
Yes, this is where people see the best chance of the new national anthem taking root. Third grade, St. George's Grammar School, Cape Town. This multiracial class is taught in 3 languages. When these children sing the anthem, it's in full voice. 22 South Africans who know the words and are learning what they mean about their country's history and its hope for a multicultural future. For The World, I'm Terry Fitzpatrick in Cape Town.
Okay, on to another language. The language of IKEA. Yes, that's the Swedish-owned home furnishings superstore. IKEA has a language of sorts. Everything you buy there is named according to certain rules. They're not exactly linguistic rules, but there is a kind of a naming code. There's also an online game you can play. This is not an IKEA product, by the way. You have to guess what, for example, a logga is or a pussla. We're going to play that game in a moment. And just to prove that all languages generate some kind of controversy, a professor from Denmark is claiming that IKEA-ese, or whatever we want to call it, IKEA-ese insults the great Danish nation. Really? Really? Not that IKEA agrees. So I asked my friend Tracy Tong about IKEA's weird names. Tracy's a producer here at The World. She's also an IKEA addict. And I guess her neighbors are too. Here's what she told me.
When my neighbors and I talk about all of our IKEA furniture that sort of occupies all of our living rooms and the dining rooms and bedrooms and kitchens and children's rooms, we started using these names. Oh, I bought a Pohang chair. Oh, I did too. I bought the black one. Oh, I bought the black Ektorp.
Well, it's pretty clear that Tracy likes IKEA furniture, even if she doesn't know what the names mean. So we're going to ask an expert. On the ISDN line from Portland, Oregon, is Anna Bronnes, who's written about this linguistic phenomenon for the blog Gadling. And Anna, I understand you have one Swedish parent and one American parent. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. My mom is from Sweden. My father's from the States, but he speaks Swedish as well. So I grew up speaking Swedish as a child.
Ah, you are the perfect expert for IKEA then. So, Anna, Tracy walks into an IKEA. She buys a couch called an Ektorp. Why is it called an Ektorp?
Well, a couch would fall under one of the categories. I can't remember off the top of my head, but that's named after a place. And I think that the couches are named after places in Sweden. So that's actually a location.
Oh, I see. The word Ektorp is name of a city.
Yes, or a place. It can be a village or a city or even just an area.
And as far as I understand it, the etymology of IKEA speak goes beyond Swedish place names to include places and objects all across Scandinavia.
Yes, they have different categories. For example, rugs get named after places in Denmark, and dining tables and dining chairs get named after places in Finland. So they sort of go all over the board.
Why has IKEA done this?
Well, it was in fact because the man who started IKEA, Ingvar, he was actually dyslexic. And so he found that it was easier for him to remember names of products when there was a certain system to naming them. So instead of coming up with names just at random, he decided that he needed a certain structure for naming the products.
Now, I understand that this naming system has caused a bit of a ruckus in Sweden's neighbor, Denmark. There's a professor at Copenhagen University who's accused IKEA of cultural imperialism, which is, I thought Scandinavians were a peaceful bunch these days anyway. But he claims that IKEA has chosen the objects with the lowest value. I get you mentioned rugs before. And he's given those the Danish names. Please, say it ain't so.
Well, yeah, so this was an article that came out in a free daily Danish newspaper. They had interviewed this assistant professor of political communication at the University of Copenhagen, and they were speaking to the fact that of the IKEA products, the only ones that get named after Danish locations or cities are, in fact, carpets and doormats and rugs. And the Daily newspaper had stated that these were furniture objects of lesser value, not quite as cool or hip as furniture like couches or bookshelves. And so this professor had then stated, well, they're obviously making fun of Denmark, and it's, you know, a form of cultural imperialism, Sweden trying to one-up Denmark and show that it's better. And although Scandinavians are rather friendly, I think there's a lot of joking in between the Scandinavian countries that goes on. It's similar to, you know, Canadian and American jokes that happen between the two countries.
There's also this IKEA game that you can play online, this multiple choice game, and you have to guess, for example, whether a pussla, if I'm saying this right, is number one, a packing box. Number two, a shoe rack. Number three, beads. Number four, a changing table. Or number five, a crib. So, Anna, what is it?
I think that those are the beads. but I'm not 100% sure.
And you're right. It is the beads. That's great.
So that's actually, so pisla is actually a word that would fall into the children's category because it's a more children-related word. It's an adjective, which most children's products are either named after adjectives or mammals or birds, in fact. So pisla means, it means to play or to do something with your hands, work a little bit, but not really focused on an end product. You're just kind of messing around.
Ah, right. Okay, so that's a Swedish word.
Yes, correct.
Okay. I wonder if there's any of these that are from some of the other Scandinavian countries. Let me see. Peng, P-E-N-G. What does that mean?
Peng. I don't know.
These are your options. It is a dining table, number one. Number two, a wall-mounted drop-leaf table. Number three, a placemat. Number four, a crib. They like that crib option, don't they? And number five, a packing box. What do you think? What are you going for?
Packing box.
Yep, you're right. It's a packing box. You've got that Scandinavian background.
Well, that was by process of elimination, in fact, because the wasn't one answer a dining table?
That's right.
So a dining table would have a Finnish name of a Finnish city or location. So I kind of figured it wasn't either of those.
Ah, right. Okay, that right. Makes sense. Well, Anna Bronitz, thanks so much for helping sort us through the language of IKEA.
Thank you, Patrick. Or should I say, tack så mycket.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the first of what I hope will be many, many editions of The World in Words. Check out the rest of the world's output at theworld.org, and you can contact me at language@pri.org.